continuing. Canto 2, Chapter 7, text number 'Gajendramoksha', which is both text number 15 and 16. Not certain of that. Fifteen, 16 are Gajendramoksha. Text 15 reads, "The leader of the elephants, whose leg was attacked in a river by a crocodile of superior strength, was much aggrieved. Taking a lotus flower in his trunk, he addressed the Lord, saying, 'O original enjoyer, Lord of the universe, O deliverer as famous as a place of pilgrimage, all are purified simply by hearing your holy name, which is worthy to be chanted.'" The Leela is not so much what Prabhupada discusses in the purport, but rather the segments of the verse itself, the specific glorifications of the Supreme Lord. So, the Leela is a king, Yumna, was cursed by a sage to become an elephant because the sage was visiting the king while the king was in meditation, in trance of meditation, and didn't honor the sage when the sage came into his hermitage. So the sage became angry. We have these incidences of sages becoming angry when sages aren't supposed to become angry. They're supposed to be tolerant and other nice qualities. But we can understand when sages become angry is for the benefit of the other individual. And sure enough, Gajendra achieved spiritual, or the king achieved spiritual perfection in his next life. So that was pretty nice benediction. Although it looked otherwise, he became angry with him and cursed him to become a dull animal, an elephant. And he became an elephant. And he got in this problem. And then his Krishna consciousness was restored to where it was previously, and then it went way beyond where it was previously by the urgency of the situation. So, normally, in the Leela it's described in detail here just briefly that normally elephants are stronger than crocodiles. But that's on the land. And when the elephant is in the water, his strength is diminished and the crocodile's strength is comparatively increased. And so that creates a problem. In the eighth canto, where this nimba is elaborately discussed, he makes the comment that ashram considerations are similar. Someone may be a renunciate and someone may be a grihastha, and it may be more suited for the grihastha to fight against maya or to take shelter of Krishna from that ashram. It adds strength. And if they tried to be a renunciate, it would take away strength. So each person needs to take up the fight against maya in appropriate atmosphere for them. And ashram considerations are for that purpose. Not the other purpose. Not a license for enjoyment on one side or a dry renunciation on the other side. But whatever is a more suitable situation for one, a natural situation for one to take up the path to Krishna, the fight against maya, in order to reach Krishna. And in the stotras, interesting here in the seventh canto that the prayer that Gajendra is offering is not one of the standard prayers that he recited in the eighth canto, but it's one of these spontaneous prayers. It does give glorification of the Lord in specific ways, but it specifically mentions his holy name. Now in the Leela, he calls out for the Lord, but he doesn't specify which Lord. The comment is made that Lord Shiva didn't appear, Lord Brahma didn't appear, but Lord Vishnu appeared, because although he did not address by name, he addressed the Supreme by qualification. And so Lord Vishnu came instead of the other two, or any other deva. And the indication is then made that one may not be well educated in spiritual science, but if the sincerity is to surrender to the Supreme, he knows. It's like Prabhupada made a comment that my Western disciples are sometimes criticized by smartas and others. Oh, they don't know proper pronunciation of the Sanskrit. But then Prabhupada said, Krishna knows. If they don't pronounce Krishna's name correctly, just like a child may not say someone's name correctly, but the understanding adult will understand the intention and will accept the intention. So the smarta objection or preference for precise chanting of mantras, it's nice, but when it comes to matters of devotion and with procedures of the Vedas, the exact pronunciation and meter and everything must be exact, but with devotion, that's not the prerequisite. It's not based upon our own credential. It's based upon Krishna's mercy and our sincere calling for Krishna's mercy. And Krishna accepts. We just had this discussion in our GBC meetings in Mayapur. The Sanskrit department came up with a technical point in the Gayatri mantras that are issued within ISKCON. And without disclosing the detail, there was an idea that one word should become the ending, instead of being OH, should be UH, because the rule in this situation, it should be UH, not OH. Okay. So we changed it. Now the gurus, when giving out Gayatri mantras, should henceforward give out UH instead of OH. But there was also the understanding that Krishna knows. And that's in the introduction, or rather the preface to Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada quotes Narada saying to Vyas, even there may be errors in this composition. The personality of Godhead will accept Yasmin prati slokim abhadyavatyapi api, although there may be discrepancies in the technical composition of the Bhagavatam or the commentary to the Bhagavatam, that saintly persons will greatly appreciate this literature, because its essence is glorification of Krishna. And so that's what Gajendra was doing. Glorification of the Supreme Lord. Now, therefore it appears in this seventh canto that he was glorifying the holy name. All are purified simply by hearing your holy name, which is worthy of being chanted. Now this also indicates the personality of Godhead, because the name of the personality of Godhead is not to be equaled by any other name. However auspicious a person may be or their name may be, it's not the same as the name of the personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada writes, every living entity is always distressed in this material world because this place is such that at every step one has to meet with some kind of distress. But one who is supported by his past good deeds engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.16. What's Bhagavad Gita 7.16? Chatur vidhat bhajante mam jani sukritin arjuna. Those who are pious, sukriti, they engage themselves in my devotional service when prompted by distress. The indication is that's one of the four reasons given. But one who is supported by his past good deeds engages himself in devotion. Also, those who are supported by impious acts cannot be engaged in devotional service of the Lord, even though they are distressed. That is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.15. Four types of people never engage in my devotional service. Those who are by nature impious. So there's another Yesham Tvantagatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvandva Moha Nirmukta Bhajante Mam Dridhavrata. It makes it sound like, you know, it's a prerequisite for devotional service. You have to be pious. So, in one sense, yes. In an ordinary circumstance, yes. However, when there's intervention of a merciful devotee, just like Narada and Valmiki or Narada and the hunter, or Lord Chaitanya and Jagai Madhai, then the person can be sinful to the max if one receives the mercy of a devotee. Then that establishes the piety, the requisite, just causeless mercy. Then the background requirements is taken care of. One is made pious by that association, or the reactions to one's past misdeeds are quickly dissolved by such valuable association. And these pastimes are shown, and for that matter, the persons that Lord Chaitanya encountered, or Lord Nityananda encountered, or that Srila Prabhupada encountered, or that, in this age, people are very degraded. And how do you, if you have a prerequisite, they have to be pious, you got a problem. They have a very small bank account, a punya account. So therefore, engaging persons in simply hearing the holy name and seeing the devotees and rendering some kind of receiving prasadam, some agyata sukriti, becomes very important. Therefore, our public festivals of Rath Yatra and Harinam Sankirtan and book distribution, just to make people whose backgrounds are impious benefited by devotee association and the prasad of the Lord and so on. If the bhaktas or Vaishnavas don't do such things, then the population is really in a big trouble. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya inaugurated this Sankirtan to bring that to the impious world of Kali Yuga, influenced by quarrel and all of its other symptoms, a benefit. So now, the word by word used in the glorification by Gajendra of the personality of Godhead. The first one, the phrase that he uses, he addresses the Lord as Adi Purusha, the original enjoyer. Oh, original enjoyer. Because Purusha implies enjoyer, and Prakriti is the enjoyed. So the original enjoyer, that's Krishna. Then Prabhupada goes a little deeper into this idea of being an enjoyer. He says that as long as wherever there is consciousness, you're going to find an enjoyer. And living entities, being part and parcel of the Supreme, they're also conscious. And therefore there's also this tendency to be an enjoyer. If that tendency for enjoyment is in their loving relationship with Krishna, that's the natural enjoyment. Like this question last night about being peaceful. What's your definition of being peaceful? Where our tendency for enjoyment is reposed on Krishna's enjoyment, then one can be peaceful. And we can't, like, anesthetize the propensity for enjoyment. It's there, it's natural to the soul. So join that tendency of just the fact that we're conscious beings with the enjoyment of Krishna, and that's peaceful. And that's the highest enjoyment. And so it's recognizing there's the Adi Purusha, although we're little tiny Purushas or imitation Purushas. We're not meant to enjoy Prakriti. We, in fact, are Para Prakriti, not meant to enjoy the Apara Prakriti. We're meant to connect the Apara Prakriti to Adi Purusha. And then, as conscious beings, that's our greatest happiness and peace. And that's essentially what Prabhupada is saying here in the purport. A pure devotee knows very well that everything in the universe is the property of the Lord, and that a living entity can enjoy a thing as ordained by the Lord, like the Isa Vasham Idam Sarvam, that verse from Ishopanishad. A living being cannot even touch a thing which is not allotted to him. This idea of the original enjoyer, Adi Purusha, is explained very nicely in Ishopanishad. One who knows this difference between the Lord and himself never accepts anything without first offering it to the Lord, because he's Adi Purusha. And we're secondary Purushas, tiny, tiny Purushas. So Adi Purusha, then Akila Lokanath. The translation in the verse is Lord of the universe. And therefore he's the Lord of elephants also. So you are my Lord. You're Lord of everything. Lord of the universe. So you're my Lord. The elephant, being a pure devotee of the Lord, specifically deserved to be saved from the attack of the crocodile. He not only desired it, but because it is a promise of the Lord that the devotee will never be vanquished, it was quite befitting that the elephant called upon the Lord to protect him, and the merciful Lord also at once responded. The Lord is the protector of everyone, including crocodiles. But he is the first protector of one who acknowledges the superiority of the Lord, instead of being so falsely proud as to deny the superiority of the Lord or claim to be equal to him. He is ever superior. Akila Lokanath. Then O Deliverer. No, that's not the next one. It's as famous as a place of pilgrimage. Tirtha Shravaha. The elephant also addressed the Lord as Tirtha Shravaha, as famous as a place of pilgrimage. People go to places of pilgrimage in order to be delivered from the reactions of unknown sinful acts. But one can be freed from all sinful reactions simply by remembering his holy name. Therefore, the Lord is as good as the holy places of pilgrimage. Down further, a pure devotee of the Lord never commits any sinful acts. But because the whole world is full of sinful atmosphere, even a pure devotee may commit a sin unconsciously as a matter of course. So it's different. You know, unintentional and intentional. Sinning on the strength of chanting is an offense to the holy name. So this is the unintentional, and one who takes shelter of the Lord. The reactions for those unintentional offenses are removed by Tirtha Shravaha, one who is as famous as a place of pilgrimage. And the alliteration is also very nice. Shravana Mangalam. This is Tirtha Shravaha, and this is Shravana Mangalam. Tirtha Shravahas Shravana Mangalam Namadheya. So, Shravana Mangala, this means that one receives everything auspicious simply by hearing the holy name. all are purified simply by hearing your holy name, which is worthy of being chanted. So, Shravana Mangala Prabhupada says it's very similar to another place, Punya Shravana Kirtana, from chapter 2, first canto. Just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Srinvata, Sakata, Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, Hridyantakso, Yabhadrani, Vidhunoti, Saritsatam. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, or hearing the names of the Lord, at once cleanses. Even if one doesn't know that one is being cleansed, one is being cleansed. That's how powerful the spiritual potency is of Krishna's name or the messages of Krishna. And it's a different kind of piety than material piety. Because you can't say the same about some material pious act. You can't say that a material pious act cleanses away all of one's past sins. You can say it increases something on the pious side. Atonement may decrease something on the impious side. But that's not what the effect... It's an offense to consider the chanting of the holy name or devotional service to be on the same platform as material pious activity. It's not. There are activities that increase bhog anmukhi sukriti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches classics. Examples of that are digging wells, or planting trees in the side of the road. People don't do that so much anymore, they cut them down. But the idea would be that so that the people that are walking in the heat of the day, so they would have shade and cool ground where they could, then their feet would not burn. So it's pious. Make the pathway covered by nice shade trees. It's a pious act. Planting trees by the side of the road, or digging wells so persons can easily get water as a service to others. So that's in the category of bhog anmukhi sukriti. One gets that benefit, pious benefit, or upgrade of material enjoyments. And moksha anmukhi sukriti is the study of the Vedas. Assiduous study of the Vedas brings the sukriti of moksha. And there's bhakti anmukhi sukriti. So when we hear the word pious, normally the mind goes to material piety, but there's different kinds of piety, in fact. And devotional service, knowingly or unknowingly rendered, increases one's standing in the eternal relationship of Krishna. The potencies are there to do that, and to be so connected to Krishna, it dissolves one's past impious activities, and it establishes the fruits of one's pious activities. So this Yesham Tvantagatam Papam verse is fulfilled just by the association of devotees. And by their association being engaged in devotional service. There's a small problem, however, and that is one may not be very determined on that path. So, in the beginning of devotional service, faith is said to be soft and pliable, and therefore the hearing process becomes very important to fix one's intelligence and purify one's intelligence by worshipping Krishna with one's intelligence, thus purifying the intelligence by hearing and studying carefully Krishna's message, so that the intelligence can then guide the mind and senses in the proper path and direction to Krishna. So we combine this association of devotees specifically with the process of hearing and chanting. The Lord descends on this earth and acts like others in connection with the activities of the world just to create subject matters for hearing about Him. Otherwise, the Lord has nothing to do with coming into this world, nor has He any obligation to do anything. He comes of His own causeless mercy and acts as He desires. And the Vedas and Puranas are full of descriptions of His different activities so that people in general may naturally be eager to hear and read something about His activities. So, he goes on, people are going to read and hear other things. So much literature, rubbish literature, of so many descriptions, depending upon the attitude of the individuals. So that's, if there's a vacancy in spiritual topics, it'll be filled with some other material. So part, an obvious part, important, strong, important part of a mission to revitalize, re-spiritualize the population of the world must be the wide propagation of spiritual literature. Although the people may have become crow-like with their taste and they prefer reading newspapers and other literatures, novels and other such things, as opposed to spiritual topics. So that's part of our challenge in Kali Yuga, to encourage people to take to spiritual topics. Concluding words. It is concluded, therefore, that the holy name of the Lord and topics in relation with Him are always worth hearing, and therefore He is called here in this verse Nama Dhyaya. Nama Dhyaya. One who is whose holy name is worth chanting. Nama Dhyaya. So this is the, he just broken apart the last two lines and wrote a long purport. Ahedam Adi Purusha Akila Loka Nath Tirtha Shravana Shravana Mangala Nama Dhyaya. Nama Dhyaya. So that's Gajendra's prayer with the crocodile on his leg and a lotus flower in his trunk. Oh, original enjoyer, Lord of the universe, oh, deliverer as famous as a place of pilgrimage, all are purified simply by hearing your holy name, which is worthy to be chanted. I don't know if that's what we would say if we had a crocodile on our leg and we saw the Lord in the sky. But that's the consciousness of Gajendra. Oh, original enjoyer, Lord of the universe, meaning you're my Lord also, oh, deliverer, as famous as a place of pilgrimage, all are purified simply by hearing your holy name, which is worthy to be chanted. Shravana Mangala Nama Dhyaya. Any discussion on the verse?
Guru Maharaj? I was very inspired by especially your last words there. I think still managed to pick up a lotus flower and offer these wonderful prayers. So applying it in my own case, like when there are obstacles, sometimes I do remember to call out for the Lord, but then it's done not in a proper way like this, like first offering with love and devotion and then glorifying the Lord.
One step at a time. He was a great personality. It wasn't us.
Is that an attitude that one should cultivate? That mood of
this comment that you're making is similar to a comment that you made in New Jersey, that something that you're appreciating is when approaching a great personality, first some words of appreciation of that personality. And that's a cultural matter, that when one becomes refined, it just becomes part of refinement. And should we culture refinement? Sure. Not imitate, but culture refinement. No, like take it in basics. Do we say please and thank you? Yes. But it's not just a matter of please and thank you. It's a matter of deeper sense of culture. So, but we don't refrain from saying please and thank you because, you know, that's just... So, don't just put on, what do they call the cladding? And they put on the outside of a house. You build these simple frames houses, and then they put this stuff that looks like brick, but it's not brick. Just some cosmetic thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's probably, you know, made of some plastic thing or something. So that we don't want. Just some cosmetic something. We want a deeper sense of the real quality of appreciation and gratitude, and whatever the words are, they'll be appreciated. When it's coming from a genuine place. You know, we it's not so common these days anymore, but we know people, I know people, that in a statesmanlike way, you give them a floor and they'll go off about, you know, in all eloquent words about something in praise of another person. You know, you just can't wait till it's over. Because the culture of doing something like that is nice, but it's more important is the consciousness behind. Which is very similar to this idea of the precise pronunciation of the Sanskrit is less important. It's the consciousness of devotion and surrender that Krishna wishes, not the other. Now, if you can combine the two, that's wonderful. So, you know, precise pronunciation of Sanskrit and eloquent words of praise and appreciation with the proper consciousness.
Yeah. You mentioned that by just getting ourselves connected with Krishna can dissolve our many, many impious activities that had been mm-hmm. carried to this life. And you said that the only problem is that one is not so determined. So my question is quite general, like how to increase our determination to dedicate our lives to the service of Guru and Krishna.
Well, something that really stands out from what I heard from Srila Prabhupada was the perfection of yoga series in Los Angeles, where the devotees were reading from chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, and then Prabhupada would, you know, interrupt as they would read and then speak something. And in that series, perfection of yoga series, this question was asked of Prabhupada: how does one increase one's determination? And Prabhupada's reply was, by process of sacrifice and austerity, one's determination increases. So, what are appropriate sacrifices and austerities for a devotee practicing Krishna consciousness? How we observe the appearance days of the Lord, and fasting, and making extra arrangements for hearing and chanting, or codices. Those are two standard ways. Well, there are Vaishnava austerities for us, prescribed. Our rising early program. Last night I set the clock right by my head and set the alarm and failed to push the button. Wasn't intentional, but so I didn't get up at the proper time. But rising early and becoming regulated in that, that's a Vaishnava austerity, and it strengthens one's determination. Or we go the other direction, whenever I feel like it, or then it's that depletes one's determination. That's a very simple place to start. The austerities of the mind and senses, to observe them. To not allow the mind to dally on inappropriate subjects or mundane subjects. And just move the mind from that. So, like the sequence from contemplating the objects of the senses, that chain, attachment, bewilderment, loss of memory, intelligence is lost. So, curb that tendency right from the very beginning. Just don't allow the mind to contemplate objects. And it strengthens one's determination. Simple, very simple. So that's the don't, and then there's the do, where it then place the mind where it belongs. Strengthens determination.
Understand that, like in this purport, there is various places that say that chanting is very important and hearing is very important.
Chanting and hearing are important.
And so I am trying to understand deeply that how chanting, hearing, and reading, they all are basically glorifications of the Lord. And
you want to understand how chanting, hearing, and reading are different types of glorification of the Lord.
Yes, yes.
That's your question? Not exactly.
Basically, they are different, but they are same. So I'm not able to.
Okay. There are different types of devotional service, and that's what devotional service is. When you say, it's approaching the Lord with one's heart open to Him to serve Him. And one way of serving is hearing. Another way of serving is chanting. Another way of serving is remembering. But they're expressions of devotional service. It's not passive. Hearing is not a passive exercise. It's active. Whereas one's extending one's inquisitiveness and conscious aptitude, here is some subject matter of Krishna that we receive. So it's active, not passive. It's devotional service. And then as one's heart becomes moved, then speaking, vibrating, it's another service. And then remembering just follows naturally from hearing and chanting nicely. Is there's then, even when you're not ardently hearing or speaking some words, the remembrance is there. In the course of activity, the remembrance is there because there's some attachment that's formed, and there's a natural remembrance that's there. And other forms of service flow from that hearing and chanting.
Is it a good idea to, like, we generally just play some lectures while we're doing other services and hear that, or it's a better idea to, like, as we do morning and evening hearing, to just, you know, as you're saying, remember and contemplate on those?
I think each devotee likes to do things in a slightly different way, and that's quite okay. So, I'll respond to your question the other way around, saying that as a baseline, some morning and evening very attentive hearing, that's like, you know, that's really to be there. And then how you direct your consciousness in the course of the rest of the day with hearing or chanting while doing other services. Different. Some persons like to sing, some persons like to chant, some persons like to listen, some persons like to recite, you know, memorize slokas, some persons like to recall stories. You know, so think of ways to spread Krishna consciousness. So different ways to engage. So, you know, each individual will find, by making efforts, will find this, you know, this or this combination. So I don't want to say it should be like this. And, you know, if the answer is that's fine, and so many other things may also be fine. In the sandwich, you know, what you like in the middle of
the Maharaj, it's a continuation of what my husband has in protection, where I'm miserably failing to even realize the protection from Guru and Krishna unless and until somebody reminds me that you are getting the descendant. Every moment I'm realizing that I'm not. Unless somebody reminds me, so what to do?
What to do? Get lots of reminders, I guess.
I'm getting reminders.
Okay. You know, you practice it, Prabhupada's teaching is you practice it something that becomes second nature. How to remain always mindful is you, at intervals, you practice mindfulness. And as you said, through reminders from your husband, oh, okay, so then, you know, how do you take that which, that reminder, and make it go more deeply? Or, you know, assist it to go more deeply? It's both the regard that you have for your husband and the gratitude for that reminder, but then it's also a thing that you can do to remind yourself. Like, keep a little journal, you know, there's this reminder. They say with education, you write something down, it sticks better.
Yeah.
Right? So it's true in the devotional process. You write it down. Even just by the act of writing it down, it helps make the idea that's in the mind more clear, because you have to write it down in precisely the way that and then from time to time go back and review those things, and that this deepening the mindfulness. And then you can, you know, turn to Krishna and thank Krishna for his kindness. Then you're hearing chanting. And then you can do something in the consciousness of your, let's say, you know, so even something that you do every day, in the course of something you do every day. Okay, while I cleaned the pots this morning, I'm going to carry this instruction that I heard from my husband 25,000 times already, you know, about gratitude and it being so that I have this opportunity to be in this consciousness while cleaning this pot. This is mercy. Why? Because, and then you fill in the because, and so as you're doing the activity, you're, so let me do this as an expression of my appreciation and acknowledgement of the kindness and mercy that I'm receiving. You bring the consciousness into connection with the, you know, the practical activities of the day. And then, you know, assist the mission of bringing that consciousness of awareness of the mercy that we're receiving from God into the life of another person, to assist the Lord's mission in that way. Consciously, I'm doing this for this reason. I want it to more deeply enter my heart, so that I'm being benefited so much. So for my purification and benefit, let me extend myself to another with that prayer. So there are ways to, but that it starts with hearing. You want to say something? She wants to say something. She doesn't have a chance.
I don't have anything to say. I want to ask something.
Okay, what would you like to ask?
So I think I'm the lowest of the devotees here, because the simple thing, Ray, which you just talked about, rising, getting up early, I'm just not able to do it. I do it, I try it, I think of doing it, I try it, and finally once in 7 days I will.
But okay, you're 1/7 of the way there.
Yeah, but it's never gone up. It might go down. So I want to know how to channel my energy in more positive way, so that I can focus. Because I live by myself. I don't have enough responsibilities. I have no excuses to say I can't do this.
Okay.
I even sleep early. At 9 to get up early, I still can't.
Okay. The formula is simple. The execution may be, you know, where it gets a little tough. The formula is, in a general, it's three things. In a general way, you frame your life in goodness as much as you can. You know, so getting up early is an objective. Okay, that's tough. Let me frame my life in goodness. My eating habits, my speaking habits, my cleanliness, my truthfulness, qualities that are of goodness. Things that I can do. Let me frame, so you make a nice incubation chamber that says goodness. And as much as you can. Those areas that you can. Second thing is, there's some areas that of devotion that you find you get very much strength from, whatever that may be. Maybe chanting, it may be reading, maybe worshiping, it may be praying. Something that enlivens the soul. You get charged. You plug in your battery charger. Get charged. And from that added strength and the chamber of goodness, now you have something to work with, and you go over to an area that's not so strong. You borrow from strength, act from a position of strength to help the position that's not so strong. And don't have a high expectation, just a step. And then maintain that. Continue that which charging your battery and those parts of your life that you can frame in goodness. It helps nurture, like an incubation chamber or a womb, it helps nurture this devotion that you're growing inside. And then from that devotional strength, you go over here, where it's not so strong. 3 steps. And be patient.
That's one thing I want to learn and make a part of my life.
So, if you have trust in Krishna, you can be patient. If you're relying upon your own strength, that's fruitive. Same as the discussion last night. It sounds like this is an area that you need to over a period of time, which requires patience, you address, you know, shifting from fruitive mentality to devotional mentality. To do for Krishna, and you just rely on Krishna. As opposed to I'm doing it, I'm relying on my own strength. I'm doing myself and I'm relying upon my own strength. That's material. Krishna just disappeared. Or he's off in the, you know, backyard somewhere. You know, far away. But if Krishna's right in the center, I make some effort, but my effort is completely, it's absolutely dependent upon Krishna. Krishna's kind and loving and all-powerful. So I'm not relying on my strength, I'm relying on my relationship with Krishna, and Krishna's all strength. And if he wants, it's going to happen. And if he doesn't want, I only want what he wants. I want my relationship with Krishna, that's what I want. And whatever he wants is fine with me. So I'm hearing from scriptures and from the devotees, rising early, it's important. Okay, Krishna, I'm turning to you. From my side, I'm going to do these 3 things. And then I'm relying upon you. Not like, you know, you're bad if you don't do it. It's, I'm relying upon you. Frame my life in goodness. Focus on those things that give me strength. Spiritual strength. You like chanting?
I
can. Okay. So, take strength from chanting. Take strength from studying Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Take strength from where you get strength. Association with devotees. Plug in. Charge up.
And I think one thing that gives me joy, which turns into my strength, is admiring small miracles of nature. Even see a flower bloom or just take a walk in the fresh air.
Okay. See, and so see Krishna there, and that will help, because there are direct devotional activities that revealed scriptures tell us. This is the best place to plug in. And of all of them, hearing is essential. And hearing the scripture, or hearing the chanting, or hearing devotees, hearing, shravana. So, then that strength comes and you borrow from that strength. And it adds to more the feature of goodness. Rising early is a feature of goodness. It's not... that's the essence of Krishna consciousness. It's a feature of goodness. But it helps a lot in this matter of increasing determination. But, you know, the greater power of determination is wanting a relationship with God than the determination to rise early.
I think one thing is also about channeling the energy in the right direction, because just the mind goes in so many directions that even if you don't do something, it tires you. And it takes the energy away from you.
Yeah, so therefore we need to give the mind good engagement. If it's like a child running around, non-stop running around. So the mind is like that. So the mind, then, if we give the child good engagement, they're more contented than running around. And it can be progressive. And they like it. It actually, you know, helps make them peaceful. They may still do some running around, but, you know, they're more peaceful. And harmonious with their environment. The mind needs proper engagement. In this proper, most effective means, scripture tells us, most effective means is the process of hearing. Gives the mind proper engagement. Just like what Prabhupada is saying here, Krishna appears in this world just for this reason, to give people wonderful subject matters so the mind can go there, good engagement, and become purified.
Do we have any questions?
Hare Krishna. Whoever's chanting in the background. Hey, Bob. Anything else? Go ahead.
Guru Maharaj, I wanted to understand the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like, on one hand, we understand that he opened the storehouse of the love of God and distributed it freely.
Yeah.
Irrespective of the qualification.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we stress so much on developing qualities to be able to access that mercy. So.
Well, it's not that the qualities enable us to access the mercy, and if you don't have qualities, you can't access mercy. The qualities attract Krishna. It's not the quality per se, it's the devotion that says, I want to approach Krishna in this nice condition. I want to please, just like the gopis decorating themselves. They want to please Krishna. They want to come before Krishna in such a way Krishna will be pleased. That's the purpose of the quality. It's for our benefit. It's the mentality of a servant to want to please the master. That's our benefit. Master doesn't need, Krishna doesn't need anything. We need. So the developing of nice qualities with the right purpose or spirit behind those nice qualities. That's, you know, say not being angry or being very tolerant, being very forgiving, so forth and so on. Being very clean, being truthful. Those qualities attract Krishna. Because it's the consciousness behind those qualities. It's not, you know, the offering of the fruits and flowers. It's the consciousness behind the offering. So we want nice fruits, we want nice flowers, we want nice qualities, we want nice offerings for Krishna. Because we're devotees, we want nice offerings for Krishna. It's that consciousness, not the qualities per se, not what we have in our hands, the consciousness. What we want, because the consciousness, we want nice things for Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya's mercy is there for everybody, even for people, you know, even for the Jagais and Madhais. But the fullness of receiving Lord Chaitanya's mercy came to Jagai and Madhai when they developed that consciousness. And then the good qualities came to them.
Should I ask the question, or should I ask if someone else has any questions?
You ask your question.
Okay. Ramaraj, we hear, and even today you were explaining about about the importance of hearing and chanting, and I've heard many times about hearing and chanting in the pure stage, like when the mind is fully focused on these activities. In order for me to achieve that stage, it seems to me that if I know about how it is, like how that stage is, it would be helpful for my devotional service. So if you so desire, like, can you kindly share what that experience is of pure hearing and chanting?
Now, to answer questions like this, Prabhupada would respond, and I think any Vaishnava would respond, by referring to scripture, not by referring to, you know, subjective something or other. My experiences, blah, 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 blah. But scriptural. Kapila Dev describes to Devahuti that when the hearing and chanting is done in a purified state, without effort, the mind goes to devotional topics. Like during rainy season, the Ganges flows downstream very rapidly. There's no effort. So similarly, in the purified state, the mind simply goes to the topics of Krishna. Whereas in prior stages, there's some effort. We have to bring the mind to the holy name. We have to make effort to concentrate hearing this message of Srimad Bhagavatam with great attention. So that's the sadhana stage. And the sadhya, the goal is the mind is spontaneously attracted. And in such a state, one may not observe all of the regulations of sadhana. You know, that is, the regulative disciplines, because the mind is just absorbed. But that's not to be imitated by a sadhaka. But when that comes in a spontaneous stage, that's one of the symptoms. And suprasana, you know, a happiness that just can't be compared. Rupa Goswami describes that when that stage comes, one desires millions of ears and millions of tongues to hear the holy name and chant the holy name. And that sound enters into the chambers of the heart and delights the heart. There's that verse that's the introduction or invocation verse to Vedanta Madhava by Rupa Goswami. He begins the verse, how much pleasure exists in these two syllables, Krishna, one cannot estimate. When that sound enters through the ears and into the chambers of the heart, it's a beautiful, beautiful verse. Then one desires to have millions of ears and millions of tongues. So that's it.